It's not often you hear a Democrat in the state house saying this.
I'm 100% in favor and unequivocally unwavering in support of Governor Rauner's mandatory veto.
We speak with Chicago area Representative LaShawn Ford about what he wants to see happen with tax credits for private schools. And think about the last time you reached for your phone or your computer to go shopping. Every dollar spent online may be a dollar lost to towns like Quincy, says Mayor Kyle Moore. Here he is on WUIS.
We still have taxing systems that are set up assuming that we have a economy that was based on goods.
Plus, there's all-you-can-eat lobster and shrimp, and coming soon, Asian carp.
All right, here's my first bite of Asian carp. You know, it's not that bad.
Illinois Public Media reporter Mark Schultz indulged in an Asian carp feast and lived to tell the tale. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. We'll get started just after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've seen lots of headlines about Amazon in Illinois, with Chicago making it to the second round of cities that are courting the online retail giant for a second headquarters location. And we know that Amazon is just lots of ways. It's one of the biggest ways people go shopping, right? If you want to buy shoes or shaving cream, sometimes it's a lot easier to go online than it is to go outside and go to a store, especially when temperatures are well below zero, as they have often been this winter. Because of this, not just the weather, but of course, online shopping and sort of a fundamental shift in the way people are shopping, many small businesses have been experiencing their own winter blues this season. We know that local governments also sometimes miss out on retail taxes, something that's usually a reliable and significant source of their budget. We're going to be talking to one city government official about that in a minute. But first, we wanted to turn to a few small business owners. Anna Peters is the co-owner of Art Coop. It's an art supply store in Urbana. Doug Mayles, the owner of The Cardologist in Springfield. Anna and Doug, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Sure, thanks.
Glad to be here.
Anna, let's start with you. What do you sell at Art Coop?
We sell a variety of art supplies. So we've got all sorts of different paints, substrates to put them on, photography supplies, drawing supplies. And we've started also carrying a small variety of crafts for kids.
And Doug, the Cardologist, it's a great name. I assume you sell a lot of greeting cards?
We're largely a paper store, a large amount of greeting cards. We also do kind of goofy, stupid gifts. And a lot these days, a lot of socks, which is a big category for me right now.
Socks. Okay.
That's the Art Coop, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Socks are a big... Interesting.
I happen to know that store in Urbana as well. So, yes, this is cool.
Anna, this has been one of the coldest winters, certainly in central Illinois, in the past couple of years. Have you noticed foot traffic slower for you, or is it the opposite?
It's a little bit of a variety. So I think maybe we have less typical foot traffic, but more, since we're in Lincoln Square Mall, more mall walking. Since it's so cold outside, more inside walking, and then also more families with little kids kind of doing the cabin fever thing, trying to get out of their apartments and houses and letting them run around.
Doug, how's your winter gone?
We just came off of a record-breaking November, December, Christmas time, but now we're breaking a record in another direction because January has been so cold. I have a downtown location that relies on foot traffic very heavily, and so anything that kind of keeps the people from coming out on lunch hours or just being on the sidewalk at all definitely has a negative effect on my business. So.
And so, Doug, it sounds like you said you had a good holiday season, which I wonder how much of your business depends on holiday season traffic. How important is that time of year for you for your business?
Usually, statistically, November, December combined are about 25% of my sales. I haven't really broken that out for last year yet. This is a statistic I'm kind of reaching back for. Previously, I've had the store, I'm into my 30th year now, and previously my biggest sales year ever was way back in 2006, and then after 2006, 2007, things started dropping off dramatically when the economy soured, and so making a milestone this past year, you know, 10, 11 years later, that we finally have reached a sales level that not only met our previous record, but actually exceeded it by a fair amount of money and a fair amount of fair percentage. It's kind of nice to be back on that level again at this point in time.
You know, what about you? How were the holidays for you guys?
The holidays are a pretty busy time for us. When we were on campus, before we moved, the semester beginnings in the fall and in the spring used to be our biggest times of the year. But moving to Lincoln Square, we do have a lot of holiday business. So we've got lots of gift items as well. And we do see a lot of birthday shopping, Christmas shopping, holiday shopping. So we do pretty well around then. We kind of have a little bit of a drop off between the holidays and then when school starts. But this past week with the university in Parkland being back in session, we've started picking up back up again.
And so for you all, I imagine for the Art Coop, January is probably a pretty slow month normally.
Generally, yeah. Like towards the end of it when we're getting back into the semester, it picks up. But yeah, January is pretty slow.
And you said for you, the weather's been kind of an interesting factor in terms of your foot traffic into the store this year.
True. I think that, yeah, being in the mall changes it a little bit, that we're not like a destinations store. So people are, if they're out in the mall, you know, doing walking or just, you know, doing their exercise, and then they'll kind of spin off into our store and see what we've got every so often. But yeah, it doesn't require, you know, like going out in the cold once you're in the mall.
Doug, you said that the cold weather hasn't been great for you this year. I wanted to ask you about online sales and what you think, how that's kind of impacted your business.
Yeah, you know, my industry, greeting cards, has obviously been overall sort of affected by online sales, but we are not seeing a real dip. I mean, it isn't putting me out of business, although I'm sure it's had an effect. There is a little bit of a backlash, I think, to the quick text message, to the quick email message. There are people that like the idea of a card now as opposed to just a blip of data from one phone to another or one computer to another. We're kind of at 3,000 square feet, we're pretty good for what would be an alternative card store that isn't really a name brand social expression store. I will use their term. So we have a huge selection of cards, and so when people need a card and they want a card that isn't out of the ordinary or that is out of the ordinary, we are the place they come in Springfield. Yes.
And Anna, what about you? Do you feel like you have the kind of inventory that is, you know, Doug's talking about greeting cards and how much that's kind of an industry that maybe is a little bit different. I think it's also something you need right away. So that's, I wonder, I don't know how much online sales have changed that, but for you and for the things that you all offer?
I think that there's definitely, people definitely do some online shopping. We have the occasional unpleasant experience when someone will come in and, you know, take up a whole bunch of our time wanting to know about a specific kind of oil paint or something, and then end the conversation by saying like, oh, thanks, like I really couldn't figure that out online by myself, but now I can go and order it from them. That's, you know, which can be a bummer for us, definitely. But something that we pride ourselves on at the Art Coop is that we're all artists that work there. So we have different experiences with all the different supplies that we have. So we're able to give a lot of problem solving advice, recommend new products, or if someone has a question, we're pretty good at figuring out an answer that's helpful.
And when we think about Anna, when you think about that sort of the online, like that was, I imagine that, I hope, unfortunately, that sounds terrible when people come in and you spend all of your time with them and then they're just like, well, now I'm going to buy it someplace cheaper. Bye.
Right. Yeah.
Is there, I mean, I wonder what you think as a bricks and mortar retailer, you know, obviously you can say, look, you're coming here for the expertise. You're coming here for the relationship. Doug, that sounds like something that you have also built up with your clientele. Is there anything that else do you think that you would like to see? I don't know if you'd like to see government or other things get involved in a way to help kind of prevent or counteract that people, I can find it somewhere, someplace cheaper online.
Well, first of all, it isn't always cheaper online. I know a lot of our items are neck and neck with the websites as far as pricing is concerned. I also think across the board, as communities and towns, municipalities, states lose out on the sales tax revenues, I think it's time for a countrywide sales tax for online purchases. I realize there's a little bit of piecemeal movement in that direction, but it's time that it's a level playing field in that regard.
Anna?
And yeah, I think that quite a lot of the brands that we sell have, like, in their contracts, you know, like, you can't, like, you have to sell it. You can't sell it for cheaper on Amazon or do big discounts or stuff like that, which kind of across the board is helpful for, you know, it's going to be the same price anywhere that you go. Also, you know, like, if you need it right now, we have it. But also, there's the you know, shipping will be involved, which is something we try to talk about as well. Also, it's like with some online realtors, things are perpetually on sale, which means that they have a little bit of a bizarre pricing structure where things are more expensive and then they say they're on sale to make them a more common price. And that's like a weird version of it just makes the whole price structure odd for everybody else involved.
So that's Anna Peters. She's co-owner of Art Coop in Urbana. I want to thank Doug Mayle as well. He's the owner of The Cardologist in Springfield. Anna, Doug, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation, to Doug's point about taxes, and that's Scott Sorrell. He's a county administrator with Peoria County. Hey, Scott, welcome back to the 21st.
Hey, Nyla. Thanks for having me again.
So I wonder, to Doug's point about sales tax revenue, I want to just ask you, first of all, what the sales tax revenue looks like in, for example, Peoria County. How does the issue of people shopping online or people shopping less in stores hit the county's bottom line?
So it's had a significant impact on us, and we group sales taxes with intergovernmental revenues, and all those come into our general fund. And it's about 50% of our general fund revenues on an annual basis, the vast majority of which are sales taxes. That's a little over $21 million. And what we've seen is a constant erosion of sales taxes continuing to decline in our community, whether it be throughout the Peoria County or in the city of Peoria, which is the county seat in the large urban area that we have.
And then I imagine there's also an impact on stores that are maybe, I don't know if there are stores that are going vacant or left vacant because people don't see it as a viable business option to have a bricks and mortar store. Are you seeing that?
We've seen several big box retailers go under. We've seen and now are vacant. Just last week, Kroger announced that two of their stores in Peoria would be closing at the end of the month. So we're seeing a significant impact in terms of local jobs and then vacant property and the loss associated with those.
So as a county administrator, how do you factor in for that budget-wise? How are you trying to work around that?
Well, that's the big challenge. And county government in Illinois is a lot different than city government in Illinois. Cities have as many as 15 or 16 types of revenue options or tools available to them. County governments in Illinois, with maybe the exception of Cook and Lake and Will and DuPage, which are the really largest counties that we have in the state. The rest of us only have six tools in our toolbox, and all of those either have a statutory maximum that we can't go above, or we've got to go to the voters to get permission to do something, like, for example, enacting a public safety sales tax to help fund the sheriff's office. We can levy that tax, but only if the voters have approved it first.
And then what about the Amazon tax, though, Scott? I think there are people listening who probably think, hey, hold on a second. I pay a tax when I'm buying something on Amazon. And in 2015, people might remember the lawsuit that went on. There was a lot of arguments about that. But I know in 2015, the state began collecting a percentage of the tax on online purchases from sellers who have a physical presence in the state. And that's supposed to be distributed among local governments. Do you see that?
We do. It's a very small amount. So the typical example that we use is making a $100 purchase at a local store and making the exact same $100 purchase online, whether it be with Amazon or any other major retailer. And each local municipality and county is going to be a little bit different depending on what your tax structure is. But if you buy it in the bricks and mortar store in Peoria, $5 goes to the state of Illinois, $2.75 goes to the city of Peoria, 75 cents goes to Peoria County, and 50 cents goes to our county schools. If you buy that same $100 item online, $5 goes to the state of Illinois, 25 cents goes to the city of Chicago, 0.9 goes to the city of Peoria, and 0.3 goes to Peoria County. And then there's another 86.3% that goes to the regional transit authorities in Chicago metro area and the St. Louis metro east area and a couple other state type of disbursements. So for me, I go from 75 cents for a store-bought purchase for every $100 to 0.3. And it makes it incredibly difficult to try and deliver services when so much of our revenues come from these sources and there's that much of a discrepancy.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to just finish up this conversation with Scott Sorrell, delving in a little bit deeper into how online sales purchases are affecting different county governments. In this case, Peoria County, where he's an administrator. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning into The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about online sales and how that affects local governments, whether those are cities or counties. In our case, we're talking about Peoria County with Peoria County Administrator Scott Sorrell on the line with us, discussing the impact that online sales revenues are having on the county and their tax collections. Scott, I wanted to just go back to something because I wonder how much of a revenue base traditionally have been sales tax revenues and property tax revenues from bricks and mortar stores. How much of that traditionally has been a revenue source for the county government?
So sales tax historically for us has been roughly in the 20% range. It's kind of hovered between 18-20%, but over the last couple of years, we've seen that actually increase, and so it's a greater percentage. Property taxes for us countywide have historically been in the 20-22% range, and that has actually declined. So we're seeing a little bit of a flip between property taxes versus sales taxes, and one's replacing the other.
And then cities that have a local sales tax, unless they're home to, for example, like an Amazon warehouse or a fulfillment center, they can't collect taxes on what their residents are buying online, too, correct?
That's correct, because Illinois is one of a handful of states that is a point of origin sales tax-based state as opposed to a destination-based sales tax state.
Does it seem like that would be an important shift in helping change revenue if we change the way tax policy would work?
Well, for those of us that don't have a fulfillment center, absolutely. For the communities that do have a fulfillment center, they would probably frown upon that, but the vast majority of us don't. And so, in the long run, Peoria County would be advocating for a shift in policy.
I wonder if you have conversations with other county administrators who are in similar situations as you all are in Peoria County, how other folks are handling this. Is this something where you feel like education of consumers is an important part of this?
Yeah, I do. I talk, you know, regularly with my peers that are in the Interstate 74 and 72 corridors. So that's the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington, Normal, Champaign, Urbana, and Springfield, because we're all very similar in size and composition, and it's something that we struggle with. You know, in terms of what we can do going forward, it really is going to be a change in legislation and how we can impact change. Because I don't think, personally, when you have two-thirds of the nation being members of Amazon Prime, you're not going to change societal buying habits at this point. So we need to change the way that sales tax is collected and distributed.
That's Scott Sorrell, Peoria County Administrator. Scott, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
You bet, Nyla. Have a great day.
Last summer, lawmakers and Governor Rauner agreed on a historic, sweeping education overhaul in the way that we fund our public schools. That was one of the biggest changes, but another part of the plan had to do with private schools. A last-minute addition to the negotiation set up a new private school scholarship tax credit called Invest in Kids, which can make up to $100 million in donations available to students to attend private schools for scholarships. Businesses and individuals can donate up to $1 million to a private school or a general scholarship fund, and they get a tax credit for 75% of that donation. But now all of this, not just funding for public schools, but the tax credit scholarship, has been thrown into question because Governor Rauner issued an amendatory veto a few weeks ago on one of the bills around this deal. Some private schools have already started collecting money for scholarships, but Governor Rauner says he wants to change the standards of which private schools are eligible for this. How is all of this working out? We're going to be speaking with a private school superintendent in a minute, but first, I'm joined by State Representative LaShawn Ford. He's a Democrat from Illinois' 5th House District. He represents communities on Chicago's west sides and western suburbs, including Oak Park, Berwyn, LaGrange, and Austin. We had a chance to catch up with him earlier this morning. Representative Ford, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be on 21st.
Representative, right now the issue is which schools are eligible for this private school scholarship tax credit. Schools have to meet certain standards set by the State Board of Education. Governor Rauner said in his amendatory veto that these regulations should be changed to include more schools. We talked to one of your colleagues in the Senate a couple weeks ago, Democrat Andy Menar. He's kind of one of the author, behind the school funding formula. He was not happy about Governor Rauner's amendatory veto. How are you feeling about what Governor Rauner did?
Well, I think that what Governor Rauner did was he put brakes on a bill and a compromise that was made between the Democrats and the Republicans without any public hearings. And what he did, he actually put brakes on this process of granting scholarships to the public. And it now shines a light on what happens in situations when deals are made and the public and the voters are not a part of knowing how the process is working and having an input on making sure that the process is fair. So whether I like everything about the governor's veto or not, I appreciate the fact that he put a stop to a program in a way. You know, he didn't stop it, but he shined light on the fact that this program is not as fair as it should be.
So do you support what the governor did?
I support what the governor did, and I hope that the governor would call a special session immediately to make sure that we fix the problem so that funding for all school districts are distributed and that the tax credit program that was historic is working for all students, especially those that ordinarily would not be afforded an opportunity to have a quality, high quality education.
So you're hoping that more schools will get to be part of this tax credit program?
I'm hoping that the schools that serve families that basically serve Black families and Latino families that they have an opportunity to be vetted to the fullest and have an opportunity to meet the standards of this tax credit program. And so what happened during the negotiations, certain schools were left out because it was put through so fast. And it was my position from day one to have a delayed implementation of the tax credit program to make sure that the public had an idea of how this program worked so that schools throughout Illinois that's registered or recognized understand the process by which they can participate in this program. It was something that I thought should have happened so that everyone was on the same page to make this program as successful as possible.
So as it stands, I know we've talked to different private school superintendents. We've got one joining us in a minute. There are some private school superintendents who are worried that making too many schools eligible for the tax credit will reduce the amount of money that's available. Should they be concerned about that?
Well, I think that what we need to do is make sure that the premise for which this scholarship program was established, that we meet those goals. And we cannot let the big institutions like Catholic Charities and Big Shoulders control all the money. I'm a Catholic. I'm a product of Catholic education from grammar school through college. I went to Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school, and Catholic university. I even studied in the seminary. But this is supposed to be a fair and equitable funding bill. And if we're going to pass legislation in the year 2018, we have to be fair about it. This state is failing in so many areas because we are not equitable. And when you have a bill like we have with the tax credit bill that clearly on the face of it is not fair and equitable, we should say, let's do a retake and let's do it right. That's the right way to do it. No one should worry about whether or not there's too many people in the state of Illinois. When it's a government program, it's everyone in and no one out if you qualify.
Now, that said, are you worried that this is going to hold up public school funding for the rest of the state? Because as it stands, the governor's mandatory veto now has halted the entire process.
Well, the governor also has the authority to use his bully pulpit and his executive orders to make sure that no funding is held up. And the governor has the ability to bring everyone back to the table to make sure that funds are distributed to school districts on time. So we still have time for that. There would be no funds distributed now anyway. I think that the funds are due to be distributed sometime in April or something. But we're fine as far as making sure that the money is distributed on time. What we're not fine with is making sure that the governor takes the next step of finishing what he intended to be when he did the mandatory veto, and that is making sure that everything in this funding bill is fair and equitable, which means he has to bring everyone back to the table and finish the job.
So just to be clear, you support Governor Rauner's amendatory veto, but you'd like to see more leadership from the governor. And then I wonder about other folks in the state house who have been working on this issue in terms of getting this resolved.
I'm 100% in favor and unequivocally unwavering in support of Governor Rauner's amendatory veto to make sure that we get this equitable funding Illinois tax credit for children right. And sometimes things happen like this when things are not done right. But, you know, work continues. All we have to do now is make sure that we get it right and make sure that all children in the state of Illinois have equal access to this program.
That's State Representative LaShawn Ford, a Democrat who represents Illinois' 8th House District, communities on Chicago's west side and western suburbs, everything from Oak Park to Austin. Thanks for being with me, Representative. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking about private schools and this tax credit that was part of the education funding overhaul last summer. I'm joined now by Jeff Holmes. He's superintendent of the Lutheran School Association of Decatur. Also on the line is Tom Lisi, a government reporter with the Herald and Review. Tom, Superintendent Holmes, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much.
Superintendent Holmes, let's start with you. How is all of this working? Had your school already qualified with the State Board of Education for the tax credit, or have you already started collecting money?
Yes, we are a recognized school with the State Board of Ed. As far as the collection of money, we have made it available to all of our donors who are interested in this. We've made the information available in terms of how they would donate the money. In terms of how much we've collected, I do not know that number at this time. I do know that I heard about a couple weeks ago that there were $36 million collected at that point, so it is going well. The problem is, and I think the representative kind of hit it on the head, I mean, we've had to implement things quickly. And, and when you do that, you want to make sure all your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed, because you don't want to leave something out and then all of a sudden find out you're not eligible to receive the dollars. A perfect example of that is the application process for parents begins on the 31st of January, and we as a school have not even seen the application. Our first introduction to that will be on tomorrow evening. We have a meeting at 4:30 where we're going to actually be trained in terms of how to help parents fill out the application. So it's been rolled out fairly quickly, and I just want to make sure we do all of our due diligence to make sure our parents get the eligible funds available to them.
Right. And just to be clear, that $36 million, I believe, is something the governor's office has put out as a number for how much the state has raised for the amount of money that's been collected throughout all of Illinois for all
Correct.
Private schools. What office is administering this, Superintendent? Who is coming to you tomorrow to explain how this is supposed to work with, I guess, with scholarships that you're supposed to start doling out next week, right?
We are working with an organization called EmpowerIllinois.org, which is a scholarship granting organization. And so the personnel from Empower Illinois will be putting on the seminar tomorrow in Springfield, and we were just notified of this on Monday, that we're having this meeting on Thursday. So that's the organization that's working with us to make sure we're up to speed.
Tommy, you've been reporting on this for the Herald and Review. Is what you're hearing from Superintendent Holmes similar to what you've heard from other private school heads?
Yeah, you know, private schools, especially in the Decatur area, are, you know, I would say very excited about this. They hope that this can sort of help, you know, increase enrollment, which has been on the bit of a decline over the years. So, you know, it's exciting for private schools, as this is an opportunity to help families that are familiar with their schools and everything. But, you know, as Superintendent Holmes says, you know, the rollout of this. This was a surprise addition to this, you know, major school funding legislation. And these nonprofits that have registered with the Department of Revenue to roll this out, it's all been done in the past couple months. So, you know, this also has a lot of repercussions years down the road.
And so what, can you just go over the timing of this for us, Tom? Superintendent Holmes was saying that they need to have the applications up by January 31st. When is the, is there a timeline for when the money has to be awarded?
It has to start being awarded by these nonprofit scholarship granting organizations starting February 1st. So there are several of these nonprofits that were created for this purpose. Some of them are active. They already existed and did similar work in other states. But Empower Illinois, which is by far the biggest one, and came from this group that was advocating for this in Springfield, this particular legislation.
Well, yes, Tom, let me stop you for a second, because we have to take a quick break. But let me just ask you
very quickly,
we just have about 30 seconds here before we have to take a break, and we will continue this
sure.
conversation. They have to award this money by February 1st, but in the case of Superintendent Holmes, they're not putting the applications out until January 31st?
Right. So it's very complicated, and you have to be first in line. That's a big part of this, too. So, we can talk more about that after the
break.
Yeah,
let's take a break and try to unravel a little bit more of this. And, Superintendent, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the timeline rollout of this as well, because I'm a little confused about this. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Nyla Boodoo, and this is the 21st, and we're talking about private schools and the tax credit that was part of the education funding overhaul. My guests are Jeff Holmes. He's a superintendent of the Lutheran School Association of Decatur. Tom Lisi is also on the line with us from the newsroom of the Herald and Review. He's a government reporter there and has been reporting on this implementation. Superintendent Holmes, I wonder if I can bring you back into this conversation, because I'm trying to understand the timeline rollout of all of this. You mentioned that you will get the applications for scholarships for these tax credits on January 31st. Tom just mentioned that the money has to start being awarded on February 1st. Am I understanding this timeline correctly?
Well, you are understanding it correctly, but I don't believe anybody's going to get awarded money on day one, on February 1st, the next day. What I have been told is that all the scholarship granting organizations are responsible for notifying families that by April 1st that they are receipt of that they've received their application, and Tom is absolutely correct. It is on a first come first served basis. So my guess is the scholarship granting organizations are going to time date these applications as they come in, and then we'll begin awarding money once the money starts flowing and they have that available to give out. I think you'll start seeing that money flowing and notification to the parents that they are in fact going to receive a scholarship.
I see. So from your perspective as a superintendent of the Lutheran School Association, how are you handling this?
Is, of course, when we first found out about this, we started, we needed to become a member of a scholarship granting organization, which we did with Empower Illinois. The unfortunate thing is that the application for us to join Empower Illinois, I just filled it out yesterday because that's the first time I got it. So I completed that application, which I know that's not going to be any problem because we're recognized by the state, so we're going to be accepted by them for no problem. But previous to that, what we did is we made sure we sent out literature to all of our parents who receive financial aid currently, that they're aware that this opportunity is available for them out there beginning, and it was supposed to be January 24th. It was supposed to be today they're supposed to start filling out applications, but Empower Illinois did not have the application available until next week, and then, of course, we're doing the training tomorrow. So I think they just delayed that simply because of how quick things have had to move here. So our parents are aware. What we're doing here is we're making all our computer labs available to parents to come down and sit with us. Myself and my director of admissions are going to the training, so we'll be trained in terms of how to sit down with them and go through the application process, make sure they have all the documentation they need in order to fill out the application correctly.
And Tom, a couple times, Superintendent Holmes, and you have mentioned groups like this organization called Empower Illinois. Are these third-party organizations handling the implementation of this tax credit? Who's processing the money and handling all of this?
Yeah, so there's a collection of nonprofit groups, and some of them, like Empower Illinois, which is by far the biggest one as far as rolling out this scholarship, they had to register with the Department of Revenue, the State Department of Revenue, by December 16th or 17th, I believe it was. And Empower Illinois did that in September, almost immediately after the legislation was enacted. So they've been sort of the most on top of this, and they've had a lot of national funding. They won't really say where it comes from, but they have a lot of folks connected to private schools in Cook County. So they have the sort of biggest infrastructure in place, and even they are struggling to sort of keep up and inform schools. And, you know, there's very little knowledge of this even outside private schools in general. So you kind of have to be connected to private schools it is to know about this opportunity.
And Superintendent Holmes, I wanted to ask you about the role of the amendatory veto in all of this. We were hearing from Representative LaShawn Ford earlier in the hour. He hopes that more schools will be included in this tax credit. You said you were already recognized by the Illinois State Board of Education. Do you agree that you would like to see more schools get recognition?
You know, for me, as long as we're all living by the same standards, I have no problem with more schools joining in. I do have concerns about, you know, schools that don't have to meet the same standards that I have in order to be recognized, and they're eligible to access the state dollars. So I do have a little bit of a concern about that. But if they're all willing to step up and do what the state's asked them to do in terms of becoming recognized, I have no problem.
And Tom, Representative Ford also said that public schools don't need the money right now. When I asked him sort of about how the public school funding had been caught up in all of this, I imagine there are some public school superintendents out there that might disagree with that sentiment.
Yeah, especially the ones that were supposed to benefit from this school funding formula. You know, there was supposed to be about a $350 million extra from last year's formula to be added to the most at-need schools. And, those, of course, are the most cash-strapped as well. So basically what's happened is that the categorical payments, which are sort of school buses and these extra expenses that schools are responsible for, they've gotten those from last year. So, and they've the schedule for last year's school funding formula is still on schedule to come into school districts' coffers. So it's just sort of, you know, there's money flowing from the state, but this is kind of another sort of point of frustration for poor school districts that were hoping that this was kind of the beginning of something better.
And Superintendent Holmes, how do you feel about this tax credit for private schools being tied to more equitable public school funding?
You know, from my perspective, anything that can generate more dollars for us to have access for families to have an opportunity to choose a private school if they so desire, I'm going to be in favor of that. So if the public schools get additional funds, you know, and we're able to access these funds, because this is the first time anything like this has happened, we've had parents who have wanted to come here, but just from a financial perspective, they couldn't afford it. This affords them that opportunity. So if the public schools benefit, private schools benefit, I'm supportive.
Right. I guess I'm asking about the amendatory veto and the fact that that right now it seems like the equitable school funding formula is a little bit in question. Do you feel like that doesn't really have very much to do with you?
I don't think it really has a whole lot of impact on us.
And what would you like to see happen as we're going forward now, as you're sort of seeing this rollout happen?
What I would like to see is, you know, for it actually to come to fruition and everything line up. You know, I wish there would have been a delay. I wish they would have, you know, because really the funds are really going to be for the next school year. We're collecting funds for next school year, so I'm not sure why the immediacy in terms of the application process. I understand it from the donor perspective, but from the application process, I don't understand that. I think they could have delayed this at least another month or even more. But, you know, it's just a great opportunity for us to have folks that can afford private school now to be able to look at it as an option.
And do you have a goal of how many more students you think you will be able to attend your schools because of these scholarships?
You know, I really don't have anything like that in mind, but, you know, and I think Tom mentioned it, you know, the a lot of people in the public sector who don't know about this, unless, for example, we've done a good job, I think, of trying to communicate through our churches that are members of our school members to let them know. So those students who currently go to public school, that might be an option. But just the general public students who are not tied to the Lutheran churches that are part of our school would not necessarily know about this. So, you know, the ability to get that word out, I think, is somewhat lacking. I think that's due to the fact that we've rushed this so quickly to get it out there. We wanted to make sure we took care of our own first and foremost.
And Tom, what are you hearing? Is it up to schools to do publicity for these scholarships as well?
That's sort of how it worked out. I mean, by law, these scholarship granting organizations are sort of legally responsible to get the word out. And, you know, the Department of Revenue says they're doing pretty much what they're supposed to do. And, you know, just to be clear, you know, for if there's any parents out there that are listening and are interested in this, basically the basics here are if you're interested, you should go to empowerillinois.org. It's sort of the most user-friendly website out there that sort of explains this program and the sort of tax forms you need and how it works. And it's of crucial importance that you apply as soon as possible. So for Empower Illinois, that's January 31st, and that has repercussions for years to come, because students, once they get awarded a scholarship, they are then basically put in the front of the line for years after that to make sure that their education is contiguous. So, you know, January 31st for the Empower Illinois application to launch, that's, you know, bulk of the schools using that, the Catholic schools and others, that day is going to have consequences for years to come as far as which students receive these scholarships.
That's Tom Lisi. He's a government reporter with the Herald and Review. We'll tweet out Tom's most recent story on this. I want to thank Superintendent Jeff Holmes for joining us as well. He's superintendent of the Lutheran School Association of Decatur. Gentlemen, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you live in Illinois, I'm going to guess you've heard about Asian carp. In case you have not, they are infamous, an invasive species in the Great Lakes and in the Illinois River. It's such a big problem that last year the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers recommended that as much as $275 million should be spent to get rid of them. States are even offering rewards to fishermen to catch them. All of this, of course, is to prevent them from going into Lake Michigan. You know, this could all be solved if everyone just started eating Asian carp.
There you go.
With an eye towards that goal, the University of Illinois hosted an Asian carp luncheon earlier this year. Illinois Public Media's own Mark Schultz was at that lunch, along with Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, and it was a joint state venture with Louisiana. Mark, we have a lot of questions about this. But one point I wanted to make, the University of Illinois actually served 12 and a half tons of Asian carp last year.
Yes. And I talked with the food service and dining service people, and they said the students want something that is sustainable or renewable, and there's plenty of Asian carp, and they breed like crazy, and they like the dishes, and also some of the Far Eastern Asian population. It's a taste of home for them.
Now, let me explain, if we should say something before we get to how it tastes, because I want to ask you about that. We shouldn't call it Asian carp. Perhaps should we call it silverfin?
That's what they want us to call it.
So it's like the mahi-mahi of, it's like another food, it's another fish name.
Absolutely. And it's not, and carp is a misnomer. It's not that bottom feeder that you pull out of the farm pond.
Asian carp is not like that carp.
It is not that. It is not that. It is a fish that is native to the China. They've farmed it, the Asian carp in China, or the silverfin, for 1,000 years, and it's a good food staple over in Asia.
Now, where did the silverfin name come from?
Well, it's a way that they want to market the fish in a way saying, you know, we've been taught in the United States carp is not a good eating fish. Well, this is not the carp we know. It's a different fish that is edible and tastes very good. So now it's called silverfin.
So you went to lunch this week,
yes.
I should say, this week, correcting myself earlier. How did Illinois gather Louisiana to Champaign-Urbana for a silverfin, a very fancy lunch that said silverfin on the front and not Asian carp?
Yes. Well, the silverfin / Asian carp was brought in the Louisiana area back in the 60s and 70s for research and maybe a fish to maybe control some algae. And like any good horror movie or action film, they escaped their barriers and went up the river and just have been destroying the ecosystem. Illinois had a big push to prevent Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes. A chef, Chef Philippe Parola, specializes in preparing dishes for the silverfin, Asian carp. Illinois, Louisiana work together, and the U of I is the liaison between the two. So,
what did it taste like? So you went to this lunch. Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti was there. Did she eat it?
Yes, she did.
What did she say about it?
She said
she probably couldn't say she didn't like it. Let's be honest.
No, but she said she did like it. She said there was one dish that had a consistency of maybe a crab cake, and another was a very flaky fish texture.
Did you like it?
I did.
Are you
a
fish person?
I do. I like
so you
seafood.
Are you like a fishy fish person? Was it a fishy fish?
Well, I eat fishy fish sometimes, but usually my friends and family object when I do, so I try to avoid that. But I didn't know what to expect. All my life I've been saying, you know, don't eat carp. Well, I tried this silverfin. It tasted really good, and it tasted like cod or tilapia. Very flavorful, good ingredients. It's a very edible fish.
And now, why haven't we been eating Asian carp? I guess, you can't go out and buy it and cook it right now, can you?
Right now, it's commercially produced. So if you see silverfin on the menu at a restaurant, go ahead and order it and try some. And there are recipes, if you happen to catch one out of the river, there are online recipes for how to prepare silverfish / Asian carp.
Well, it's probably the only fish that the government will pay you to catch, and then you can eat it, right?
Yes, that's right. Get your fishing pole and head out to the river.
And so the University of Illinois, it's interesting, has actually been serving this 12 and a half tons of Asian carp this year. So I guess the students do like it.
They do like it. The head of that said students don't eat if students would eat it if they don't like it. You know that, so they right. do like it, yes.
That's Illinois Public Media's Mark Schultz, who was at the Asian Carp lunch. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I guess we should call it Silverfin. Sorry, that is the other name for it. Thanks for tuning in today. That's all the time we have for I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.